listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is Mental Health Monday, and we're continuing a conversation in mental health topics. And it is Mental Health Awareness Month, along with a bunch of other awarenesses this month as well.
Yes.
We're going to get to that conversation in just a moment. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Rick Mars. He's author of Making Christian Counseling More Christ-Centered. He's also a senior professor of practical theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, an LCMS pastor and a licensed psychologist, and a favorite guest here on The Coffee Hour. Dr. Mars, welcome back.
Very good to be with you. Thank you much for having me.
And I should add to that also you climb stairs for fun.
Brought my glass in, yes.
Yes. So. He's a competitive stair climber.
That's a thing?
It's a thing.
That's so cool.
Yep, there are races all over the United States. And yep, I'm currently and have been for the last 15 years or so the oldest or the fastest stair climbing old man in St. Louis. So that means nobody my age or older has beaten me, except once last year, but I beat that guy this year.
That's so. Quite a title. Yeah. Now, I really need to know, though, once you climb all the way up, how do you get back down?
Elevators.
Okay.
Yes, no. Going upstairs is good for your joints. Going downstairs is bad for your joints.
I was going to say, that would hurt after a while. Yeah.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say a slide.
Or rappelling or something. Yeah.
Elevators are a good thing, especially since most of the local St. Louis race for the American Lung Association has just happened about a month ago. And those of us who are really serious do the hour-long, what do they call it, the intensive climb, the ultimate climb. And so that means how many times can you climb a 40-story building in an hour?
What?
Yeah.
Who thinks of these things? That's impressive.
And yeah, the first time I ever did it, I thought, people climb this more than once? But once you've done it, once I've gotten myself in shape, it's kind of a second nature thing. It is difficult. I mean, it is a demanding sport, but I also tell people, if you just want to come and have fun, climb at about 80 or 90% speed and don't go all out. If you go all out, you'll completely burn yourself out. But it's the best cardio exercise. I tell people, again, my father had a heart attack when he was 67. I'm 65 now. And he was a farmer in good physical shape, except he didn't do a lot of cardio sorts of things until after his heart attack. So I'm just trying to prevent having my father's heart attack at age 67 and my grandmother's heart attack at age 67 and so forth. So,
do you ever climb the stairs at the City Museum?
I have not done those. Yeah.
Because when you get to the top, then you get to take a slide down to the bottom.
I think every office building should have a slide, in my personal opinion.
That
but anyway.
I think that leads very well into today's topic on Mental Health Monday. Doing things that are important for your health and well-being, right?
Yes.
Some people are going to think their guest is delusional. Why would they bring this guy?
Why would anyone climb stairs for fun?
I mean,
for good health. Well, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Any stats for us on how many people are affected, just in the U.S. alone, are affected by mental health issues?
Some of the stuff I've looked at suggests that probably around 30% of the entire population, something like 44 million people in the United States, struggle with some form of a mental disorder as defined by the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders by the American Psychiatric Association. So 44 million, just to put that in context, we often talk about the damage can happen, the disorders, the illnesses of cancer and heart disease and diabetes. All three of those together add up to the number of people that have mental disorders.
Wow.
So, you know, just in context, and I said we often pray for people in our churches who have heart disease, and we should, and we pray for people in our churches that have cancer, and we should. Pray for people with diabetes and other sorts of physiological illnesses and disorders, and we should. But we should also be praying out loud for people with mental disorders. So all the different sorts of things we might talk about today. So, hopefully, our churches are getting past the stigma of talking about those things. I appreciate you guys talking about this regularly on Mondays with the variety of good speakers that you have come on. We in the church need to be talking about this, and we do better than we did 20 or 30 or 40 years ago when I first entered the field 40 years ago, but we're still not doing as well as we might because some people still have stigma about mental disorders. So,
Yeah, we kind of joke about May being one of the awareness months of the year. There's a lot of things that people are thinking about during the month of May, a lot of things being recognized. Why is it important for us to have mental health included in this like nationally recognized list of things?
Well, partly because it does kind of stay hidden by nature. People who are really depressed tend to stay at home and be depressed and not necessarily interact with a lot of people. People with schizophrenia or other sorts of major disorders, anxiety disorders, if they're struggling with agoraphobia, it means that they're phobic, they're anxious about going outside their house. Well, then we're not going to see them. Whereas people that have, you know, had heart disease or cancer, we often see them outside their houses or talk about them outside their houses and talk about them in church in proper spiritual ways. We just need to be doing the same thing. And again, I like to tell people, well, chapter 8 of my book talks about Luther as a soul caregiver. And you've had Stephen Saunders on. He's had a recent new book about Luther and mental health. Very, very well done. Luther suffered from depression himself. And so he knew that. There were times he couldn't get out of his bed for several days at a time. But he was also one that was very empathetic towards people that had depressive sort of episodes, had what we now call schizophrenia. For them, that was all kind of hodgepodged into one major sort of grouping. But he was at least one saying, yeah, we need to be helping those people, praying for those people. He was avant-garde, ahead of his time in terms of what other Christian leaders have been in the last 400 or 500 years. So, but the good news is, again, there are lots of people out there talking about it. I like to tell people the American Association for Christian Counseling has 50,000 members. So there are 50,000 people out there that identify as counselors from a Christian perspective, which is similar in size to some of the secular professional organizations like American Counseling Association, American Psychological Association, National Association of Social Workers. AACC is also large, and it's trying to get out that same sort of idea that, yeah, how can we counsel people who are Christians from a Christian perspective that may be helpful to them, not just in their mental health, but also in their spiritual health? If they go to a secular counselor, they will hopefully be helped in their I'm making more horizontal motions with my hands right now, being helped in their horizontal areas of life. But if they need some help in their vertical issues, their spiritual issues, then they probably want to go see either their pastor or a counselor who is a Christian that integrates their faith side in with their clinical side, or to see both their pastor and their counselor. So
we have not always done a great job of talking about mental disorders in a helpful way as a society. Mm-hmm. And even as a church, we've been somewhat historically reluctant to talk about it, other than what you pointed out about Luther being kind of ahead of his time in mm-hmm. talking about it. But even still, as you pointed out, we should be praying for this as a congregation. We should be praying for those who may be struggling with a mental disorder or experiencing difficulty or symptoms. Why is it sometimes difficult for us to talk about mental disorders and mental health?
You know, I think my generation and then my parents' generation and older thought of it as something highly negative. You know, only somebody that had real, real problems went to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and only when they were ready to go into the insane asylum, or what they might have called it back then. Mm-hmm. And it's just taken us time to disconnect from that sort of thinking and try to keep normalizing this and saying, look, people, well, again, it's a part of the fall. You know, when Adam and Eve first fell, there was this curse that God even talked about, that there would be all these struggles that they would have, that there would be these thorn plants and so forth to make their daily bread from. And even in the Old Testament, there's curses in Deuteronomy about if you don't keep my law, then you may fall prey to, and there's actually words in the Old Testament for craziness for mental disorders and so forth. A lot of people don't think like that. They think the only thing that happened back in Bible times was spiritual possession or oppression or something like that. But there's actually several places in Scripture that talk about mental My favorite one is just to tell people, remember that little story of David when he was escaping from Saul and had gone over to the Philistine area. And then the Philistine king said, we're going to go back and attack Israel. We're going to attack Saul. And so we want you, David, to come along with us. And David didn't want to attack his fellow Israelites and still respected Saul for his office. And he just was escaping from him to keep from being killed because Saul wanted to kill him. So David didn't want to do it. So what did he do? He faked being crazy. He knew what craziness, he knew what schizophrenia looked like. And so he went, and the king of the Philistines looked at the other Philistine generals and said, do I not have enough crazy people already? Why do you bring me another one? And so I use that as just historical evidence to say, at some level, David knew what schizophrenia looked like. They wouldn't have called it that at that mm-hmm. time. And the Philistine king knew what it looked like. And so it's been around for thousands of years. Again, our brain, I tell students and other pastors and stuff, this 3 pounds of flesh that God has put inside of our skulls is the most complicated part of his creation. I mean, it's billions and billions of cells interconnecting in trillions of different synapses, all in a unique way. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take very much to get that out of whack. Just a little bit of norepinephrine going one direction where it shouldn't go, or some other sort of neurotransmitter, or just head trauma. I mean, traumatic brain injury is one of the mental disorders in the DSM-5. So, you know, people that have concussions or worse than concussions and traumatic brain injury have some serious inabilities to use their memory or whatever else sort of things might be going on with them. That's a brain disorder. And again, we Lutherans are actually quite good at that because Bethesda has been around for years. Bethesda has been helping us with helping people who are educably mentally handicapped and other sorts of disorders like that, which are also in the DSM-5. We don't say mentally retarded anymore. We use different healthier terms. You know, we as a church body have done well with that. Can we do better in the disorders that are more in the emotional side or the bizarre behavior side, like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia and some of those? And again, they're not small numbers. It's 1% of our entire population struggles with schizophrenia. Another percent or percent and a half maybe struggle with bipolar disorder, with two of the most serious of the mental disorders, because they can lead people to act out in some really severe ways and be highly misunderstood by people and even dangerous. People with bipolar disorder, you know, go out and sometimes spend thousands and thousands of dollars on their credit cards, and so bankrupt themselves and their families because of the impulsivity that takes over their brain when they're in an impulsive stage, when they're not depressed, and it just, you know, leads to all kinds of other difficulties in life. Or they go out and have affairs because they are, you know, not able to control their sexual urges when they're in a manic phase. It just creates all kinds. But again, good news is there are lots of treatments available for people. We as church members, pastors, and others can guide people to a counselor, a doctor, a psychiatrist that may be able to get them on the right treatment for their bipolar or their schizophrenia or one depression we'll talk about later. And that may be helpful as well as the counseling that they might do with a professional who's been spending thousands of hours getting trained on how to do this. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Rick Mars on Mental Health Monday. We have more to talk about after a quick break. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others. To live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world. To live a life that's uncommon.
Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Rick Mars on Mental Health Monday, giving an overview today of mental health disorders. It is Mental Health Awareness Month this May. So giving an overview of just how we interact with mental health disorders in our culture, in the church. And let's talk a little bit about the stigma of mental health disorders. How do people with mental health disorders get treated differently than people with physical disorders like heart disease or a broken arm or those kind of the physical disorders?
Yeah. I spoke at a conference actually in Fort Wayne several years ago, and their theme of their conference, I just loved it, so I've kept repeating it. It was, ask me about the no casserole illness.
Mm, yeah.
And what they were saying with that was just pushing back against the stigma. We as Christians, when one of our Christian friends goes into the hospital with cancer or heart disease or some other physiological disorder, we kind of know what to do. We try to be helpful, and we take their family a casserole, you know, so that their family won't have to cook dinner one night. They can just warm it up in the microwave or the oven or whatever. We also pray out loud for people in church or tell them that we're praying for them privately if they have a physiological problem like that. But often people with mental disorders don't get that same treatment. You know, they don't get the casseroles if they're in the hospital for depression or anxiety disorder or schizophrenia or something like that. They don't get the open prayers at the altar. If we can remember that these sorts of disorders are really much more similar to cancer and heart disease and such, then we would treat them as Christians as we do people with cancer and heart disease and other sorts of things. So, yeah, just ask me about the no casserole illness. Mm-hmm. Was just a really good theme, and I kind of use that and I challenge students with that so that they will, in the future, encourage their parishioners to treat people with these sorts of disorders in similar ways that they do to physiological problems. So.
Mm. With grace and compassion.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do we see the conversation about mental disorders changing today? Us being more comfortable speaking about them. Where do we see that, and how is that helpful? Where might it not be helpful?
Yeah. No, I think it's going in the right direction. I remember when I entered this field in the 1980s, there were people who looked at me and said, "You're going to do what?" Mm-hmm. You know, even Lutheran pastors that, "You're going to do what?" to go into the psychology field that I first went into. And I went to the seminary at age 40 and became a parish pastor, and then came back to the seminary to teach for the last 18 years. But yeah, 30, 40 years ago, there were still just a lot of people going, "Is that really something that, you know, people want to do? Is counsel others?" It's changed. I mean, I can remember people in my parents' generation. My parents didn't say this, but my parents and people in my parents' generation said, "Well, I would never go to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. You'd have to be crazy to do something like that," was kind of their mentality. But it has been changing. And I think every decade it's just gotten a little bit less as we talk about it more. We just need to continue educating ourselves. I tell seminary students they should all take a class of abnormal psychology so that they get a better scope. Not that pastors are going to be doing the same type of clinical diagnosis that psychologists and psychiatrists might do, but if a pastor at least knows what schizophrenia looks like, what bipolar looks like, what anxiety disorders look like, they might be better able to refer them on to a counselor that can be helpful. And I always like to, again, I'm making the vertical versus the horizontal motion with my hands again. The psychologists and counselors are supposed to be very highly trained on the horizontal sorts of issues. The earthly pastors are not going to be that well trained on it, but the pastors are trained to address the spiritual issues. You know, the questions that people ask, like, "Why doesn't God heal me from this?"
Mm.
that can be a lifelong struggle for somebody with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, because they're often the treatments often don't lead to healing. They're just treatments that help to keep the symptoms at bay. So people ask, why doesn't God heal me? Well, people ask the same questions about heart disease and diabetes and so forth. It's just more poignant, I think, when your thinking or your feelings are so jumbled that you want to keep asking, God, why don't you heal me from this? I had a former parishioner who had a stroke a year or two before I got there, and she was just in her 50s, and she kept asking that question the entire 6 years I was her pastor. Pastor, why doesn't God heal me? And just kept pointing her back to Jesus. You know, does God really love me if he doesn't heal me? We all go through this with all the various aspects of our earthly struggles. Yes, God loves us and shows us that in Jesus Christ through his cross and through his resurrection. Ultimately, we all struggle with what Luther called Anfechtung, suffering, and it leads us into a vertical struggle with God of, why don't you treat me better? He's treated us wonderfully by giving us his son, who took upon himself all of our infirmities, which in a sense must mean that he struggled at some level of empathetically knowing what mental illness was with people, but he healed those, and he will ultimately heal us all. It's just that all of us have to heal, have to wait for our ultimate healing at the resurrection. So I'm going on and on here. So what other questions do you have?
No, you're talking Jesus. That's great.
Right.
I'll always listen to that. Well, as you were talking about the changes over generations, I'm wondering if there's been advances in psychology and neuroscience that have kind of pushed that along, the things that have furthered the conversation in culture, just because we know more about the brain. Is some of that pertinent to how we see the difference in generational thinking about mental health?
I think so, too. You know, when I took a class in the 1990s about psychopharmacology, I remember walking away from that class being a little bit frustrated. I mean, I got an A- or something in it. It was a good class. We took the same class that the medical students take in the med school at Loyola of Chicago, where I was, and by the same professor and everything. So I knew as much as general practice medical doctors do in the 1990s about those things. But we've learned a lot more about them. There are a lot more different sorts of medications. None of them still fix or cure these, but we at least know more about it. And back then, I was kind of frustrated because we really didn't talk about how do you work with counseling and the medications at the same time. Mm. In the last 30 years, there's been a push towards what's called interpersonal neurobiology, kind of looking at how God made us to not be alone. You know, it's not good for man to be alone, he said in Genesis. The interpersonal neurobiologists, Dan Siegel was the one that started this, and now there's a Christian, Kurt Thompson, who has been writing various books about it. They're saying it's not good for one brain to be alone, or even one neuron to be alone. No, it's just the way our neurons are built. They are built to interconnect with other neurons. Our brains are built to interconnect with other people's brains and minds. And so what can we do to create new neuronal processes, to new connections, because we are meditating on God's word or seeking out counseling from somebody else and they're helping us to get past whatever our struggle is or to grow in our struggle and to accept the suffering that we're going through at some level. We all have to just accept that there is going to be suffering in this life. So, yeah, there's been a lot of good improvements in interconnecting counseling work with the brain sort of work at the same time, which I'm rather excited about. So,
yeah.
I've learned a lot today.
As always.
We're going to talk again next week with Dr. Morris as well, because I have more questions now. So I'll save those for next week. We are just about out of time. Dr. Morris, thank you so much for joining us today on the Coffee Hour.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.